from KQED.
And welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer here today for Michael Krasny. We're going to turn now to a controversy that is enveloping Harvard. The school rescinded an offer of admission to one of the activist students from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, after they learned about racist messages that Kyle Kashuv had put online when he was 16. Part of the controversy is that unlike other outspoken students from that high school who advocate for gun control, Kashuv was a defender of the Second Amendment. And we want to explore this topic this hour with Scott Jasik. He is the editor of Inside Higher Ed, which is a news website covering higher education. And Scott, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Well, this is, I think, still a developing story, I guess you could say. But what are your general thoughts about Harvard's decision to rescind his offer of admission?
Sure. Well, first of all, I don't see any evidence that it relates to his political views. His political views have been very well publicized, and Harvard would have known them when Harvard admitted him. This is actually consistent with what Harvard has done in the past, in that if admitted applicants are discovered to have been using the N-word and other racial slurs online, Harvard has revoked offers of admission in the past. This is getting a lot more attention because he's well known because of his political stance and because he's a survivor of this terrible tragedy in the shooting of the high school. But I'm not convinced that's what's at play here.
How often do offers of admission get rescinded for those kinds of reasons?
They do. We did a survey of admissions directors, and many reported that they do this once or twice a year. The more common cases of people having an admissions offer revoked, though, aren't over what they said. But if a student, for instance, doesn't finish high school, or a student's grades tank second semester, senior year, or if a student has been discovered, and this is timely because of the admissions scandal, to have said anything that, or to have submitted false information.
Let's open up the phone lines. This is something you might want to weigh in on. This is a half-hour segment, of course, and the number to call is 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, of course. It's forum at kqed.org, or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter. We're at KQED Forum. You know, David Brooks from the New York Times had a thoughtful column about this morning, which you might have seen, Scott, but already I'm looking, it's got over 2,000 comments. Many of them are in defense of this student. And I think part of the sentiment is that, you know, because of social media now, and of course, students should be aware that things they do on social media could come back to haunt them, but that the teenagers do stupid things. They do dumb things. And he immediately apologized. Is there anything he could do to redeem himself here that Harvard ought to take into account?
So first, I wouldn't say he immediately apologized after he used these terrible slurs. He apologized quite a bit later when it became known that these slurs were circulating. And look, it is a tricky issue, and thoughtful people have different points of view. On the other hand, Harvard admits students because of wonderful things they did at age 16. And I guess I would pose the question, yes, students, 16-year-olds do foolish things. I'm not sure that it's too high a bar to say that a 16-year-old should know that the N-word is not something one should say or write about.
And you say there's no evidence that his more conservative leanings, he's met President Trump, he's been an outspoken advocate for the Second Amendment. There's no evidence that that had anything to do with Harvard's decision. But certainly a lot of conservatives are saying it did. Why do you say it's unrelated?
Well, look, I wasn't privy to the Harvard admissions committee, so I'm going only on what is public. But his conservative fame was very well known at the time that Harvard admitted him. So if Harvard didn't want to admit somebody who President Trump likes, Harvard never would have admitted him. That's not what recently became known. He's been well known for that for a while.
And so you're saying that something that somebody does, even as egregious as this, using the N-word repeatedly on a shared Google Doc, I think it was, that there's no really, there's no way to sort of come back from that in terms of the way colleges approach applicants, that's just a reason for revoking the admission or denying admission.
Not so much my judgment, is that Harvard has said that it looks at certain things, including people's character. And again, they're talking about high school students' character. Different colleges and universities could respond to it in different ways. Harvard got a lot of publicity 2 years ago for doing the exact same thing. So I would argue it is not unknown that Harvard cares about this. Other colleges may not. Other colleges may pay more attention to his apology than to what he initially wrote, and that's their right to decide. My point only is that Harvard has done this before, handling it in roughly the same manner. The difference is this happens to be a student who is much more famous.
All right, let's go to the phone lines. And again, the number, if you want to weigh in on this discussion, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can also email your comments. It's forum at kqed.org. And let's start in Berkeley with Dave.
Yes, good morning. Harvard alum here, and neither myself nor anyone I know in my class or in any other year was able to beg off in our application process and say we made some mistakes in sophomore year and got a C- in chemistry or failed a class in English just because, you know, we made bad judgments about not showing up on time. This argument is completely disingenuous. And quite frankly, I and I suspect many of my fellow alums are happy that this individual won't be joining our group.
And so you agree that the politics of it are really irrelevant here and not part of Harvard's decision, as far as you know?
Well, as your guest just said, the gentleman was admitted in full light of his politics. That's not my question. My issue is, you know, a light was showing on his character that he didn't particularly appreciate. Politics is entirely driving this fake outrage cycle in the news media, but I don't believe it had anything to do with the admittance.
All right, Dave, thanks very much for the call. Scott, let me just ask you, I'm assuming the student will end up going to another university, even if he's been rejected by Harvard. Does something like this, how likely is this to, you know, sort of stay with him for, you know, indefinitely into adulthood?
Well, I mean, to the extent it does, it will be his choice. Harvard didn't announce this. He tweeted it and tweeted all the documents about it. He could have just applied to another college next year. Now, he might have handled it differently then, but the fact that we're talking about it and that the whole world knows about it is, in fact, his choice.
All right, let's go back to the phones again, 866-733-6786, and Ashish in Fremont, you're next.
Yeah, hi, this is Ashish here, and I have to disagree with both your guest and the previous caller, because this is not an isolated incident. This is part of a pattern. You see, universities all over the country, not just Harvard, professing conservative speech, conservative speakers like Ben Shapiro and Coulter and others, and even on social media, Twitter and Facebook banning, suspending accounts of people that they don't agree with regulating speech. So so basically this is part of a pattern where liberals, well, they say they are for diversity, but they cannot tolerate diverse opinions. And this is clearly an action where they didn't like the politics of the person. And so they are resigning him for what he said when he was 16 years old. And what about the conservatives? What about the liberals who have said outrageous things in the past, like the governor of Virginia, who is still the governor over there? So that's what I have to say.
All right, Ashish, thanks very much for the call. Scott Jasek, what would be a... I mean, obviously, using the N-word is completely inappropriate, unacceptable. What would be an example of something on sort of the left, if that's the way to describe it, that somebody could do or say online or on social media that would be disqualifying?
You know, that's for Harvard to decide. And unfortunately, you know, as the example with the governor of Virginia in blackface shows, doing racist things is not, sadly, unique to any one political party or perspective. This would be up to the college to decide. And again, Harvard did this before with a group of students who it denied admission to, who were on a Facebook group saying offensive things about all kinds of groups. So, you know, I can't brainstorm about which things Harvard would take offense to. That's Harvard's call. But I guess I would say, is it really controversial to say that the N-word is offensive and shouldn't be used?
Let me just read something that the students told to Vox. He said, quote, "I was in a friend group where we were saying the most shocking things for the sake of shock value. And, you know, in the same kind of messages, I said extremely anti-Semitic things. And it's not representative of who I am because I go to synagogue every week and my parents are Jewish. This isn't who I am." And then he also told, let's see, this is what he actually said, chatting in that Google Doc. He typed a racial slur, the N-word, over and over again, and went on to say, "I'm really good at typing the N-word. Practice makes perfect." And then in the text, he demeaned a female classmate by saying she only goes for N-word jocks. So clearly, I guess you would say, Scott, this is a pattern. This is not just one thing that he did or one time, one mistake, right?
That's what the Google Doc would certainly indicate. And, you know, and again, I would argue that bright 16-year-olds of the sort who want to go to Harvard should know that using the N-word is not a childish prank. It is hurtful and wrong. And as you noted, he used it not just generally, but to demean a specific classmate.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Ellen in Berkeley, you're next.
Hi there. I am a high school teacher and have been a high school teacher for 40 years. I want to reiterate what your guest has said, that 16-year-olds are well aware, whether they are on the conservative side or the liberal side, that using the N-word is inappropriate, hurtful, and horrible. And in my experience, 16-year-olds know what they're talking about. And if they say something inappropriate and they have the wit to apologize immediately afterwards, that's one thing. This young man only apologized after he was caught. So I fully support the decision to rescind information, and I warn students all the time, watch what you say. It'll follow you the rest of your life.
Ellen, to what extent do teachers talk to students about that in high school, to be careful about what they do and say online, on social media?
I can't speak for all teachers, but I certainly have said to students over and over and over again, don't do it. Don't be silly. First of all, if you have inappropriate thoughts, we should be talking about these in the classroom in a safe space, not where you are going to be spewing things on social media. So I think thoughtful education is necessary. Kids make bad decisions. They shouldn't always be fatal, but this young man did not apologize until he was called out.
All right.
And I think it has nothing to do with politics. It has to do with hurtful, thoughtless, mean, demeaning speech.
All right. Ellen, thanks very much for the call. We've got some listener comments as well. I'll give the phone number out again. It's 866-733-6786. We're talking about Harvard's decision to revoke admission to a high school student from Parkland, Florida, involved one of the student victims of the, not a victim, but was present during the shooting down there for using the N-word on social media. 866-733-6786. We're talking with Scott Jasek. He's editor of Inside Higher Ed. Charles writes, "This seems pretty basic to the core principles of our nation. Every school should have the right to reject this person as an applicant." Lisa writes, "It's never too early to learn that being a racist has negative consequences. There are plenty of colleges that will be happy to accept a white racist conservative guy. I applaud Harvard's decision." And Lanny says, as recently as last week, Kyle was directing his 200,000 Twitter followers to, quote, attack the libs. These attacks included doxing and death threats. And as you said earlier, Scott, I guess quite apart from use of the N-word, his judgment in putting this out there on social media also says something about his judgment and perhaps what his motivations are.
Absolutely. And again, I'm not saying he should be condemned for life. All I'm saying is that Harvard is applying the same policy it applied to less famous individuals. If Harvard had looked the other way here, would it have been the case of favoring the wealthy?
All right, let's go back to the phones. And Rob in Guerneville up in Sonoma County, welcome.
Oh, thank you. Can you hear me okay? I'm taking this on the road.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, excellent. I just have a comment about this whole situation, and it really goes back to the hypocrisy of conservatives. You know, they talk a huge game about personal responsibility, and yet they accept no responsibility for their actions, deeds, or words whatsoever. And it's just blatant and disgusting. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for that comment. And Scott, as we said earlier, he did apologize when this came up, when it was pointed out, when it became public. But obviously that wasn't good enough for Harvard. And you're saying that's right.
I'm saying it's what Harvard has said it does in these situations.
It's consistent.
I think the fact that Harvard has done it before and done it to people who weren't famous raises the question of, would it have been appropriate for Harvard to
overlook
to
it.
Be any different when they happen to be dealing with a famous applicant?
Yeah. I'm wondering, I don't know if you know this, but I'm just wondering, David Hogg, who is also one of the students from that high school, mm-hmm. was also admitted to Harvard. I just wondered, I haven't seen any comments from him. Have you happened to see any?
I have not, but I would say his critics have attacked him, said he doesn't deserve to get into a good college, blah, blah, blah. But to my knowledge, he hasn't said offensive things on social media. So by Harvard standards, both of these people would clearly be student leaders. Both of them would be people who responded to a terrible tragedy in ways that showed leadership, showed them to be articulate thinkers, in this case, on different sides of issues. But to my knowledge, only one of them has done offensive things on social media that involve the N-word.
Talking with Scott Jasek, he's editor of Inside Higher Ed, which is a news website covering higher education. And we're talking about the Harvard decision to revoke the admission of a student who was found to have been writing the N-word and other offensive things on social media and also on a Google Doc and texts. Should a student be held accountable for what they say or write when they're teens? Give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or you can email your questions to forum@kqed.org. Here's a comment from Daniel, who writes, I was reprimanded for using an anti-Semitic slur in a high school class. It was just a casual word for me at that time, not realizing its anti-Semitic meaning. I've always regretted that moment. I dread anybody would ever learn I did that so long ago. And again, Scott, that just highlights that, when you do things in this day and age, they live on for quite a long time if you happen to put them online.
They do, but I guess I also want to raise the question about students and schools. We write about this all the time. A fraternity will have a party where people are in blackface, and then they'll say, oh, I didn't know that was offensive. To me, in this year, in this era, for somebody to say they didn't know blackface was offensive or didn't know that using the N-word is offensive, strikes me that that's a little bit of a willful ignorance, not just a fact that they didn't happen to learn.
Yeah. Although, just to be clear, the student Kyle Kashev, did not say he didn't know it was offensive. He said he had changed. You can.
correct, but you know, at age 16, I want to defend the 16-year-olds of all political persuasions who don't use the N-word, who know that that's a bad thing to do. There's so many ways 16-year-olds can do foolish things that don't involve using the N-word.
All right, let's go back to the phones now. And John in Danville, you're next. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm happy to hear you asking the previous caller, the teacher, what happens in high school, and we're talking about schools. But my comment is about the parents. I have teenagers, and it's, daily or weekly, if not daily, comment that, you know, everything you do on your social media is there forever. And, you know, there's responsibility a parent has with their child. And I think that's getting lost in our society, and we're kind of abdicating these roles to schools and to other, adult influencers on children. But the parents need to be paying attention to their students' social media accounts, and they need to be giving them the first line of feedback of what's inappropriate. And that's my comment.
All right. Thanks very much for that. Apparently, the offensive comments did not appear on social media originally. They were in a Google Doc and I think maybe in a text as well. But still, good advice from John in Danville. Let's go now to Kim in Novato. Kim, you're next.
Hey, good morning, and thank you for this show. I heard about this story. I went online, read his words for myself, and I think Harvard definitely made the right call. I also think it's a good career move on his part, because now he's going to be a fine addition to the Fox family.
Okay.
Thank you.
Kim, thanks very much for the call. Let's go now to Helen in Los Gatos. Welcome.
Thanks. I can see both sides, but one thing is about a child's brain is it's not fully developed till they're in their, 24 years old, and kids do dumb things. I mean, they jump, they run out, escape from windows at night, they drink alcohol, they say racial slurs, and I guess I would lean more toward forgiveness than I would, destroying someone's life or destroying an opportunity that they had. And the other thing I want to comment on relative to politics, there's definitely politics behind this thing. There are groups of people on both sides, the right and the left, that are activists that will boycott and hound these universities, businesses, whatever, to take down individuals. And it's really actually kind of sick. It's like modern day lynching, and this definitely occurred. And that really, I think we need to put a stop to that.
All right, Helen, thanks very much for that. Beth writes, how many universities ask prospective applicants if they have ever said or done any antisocial things? And if someone holds sexist, racist, homophobic, and antisocial views, but they keep it to themselves, should we be less concerned? Scott, to your what's your understanding about the extent to which universities ask these questions?
I mean, there's no all-purpose, do you have these bigotries question asked? And I do think it's important to say that if they keep their views to themselves, they are admitted all the time to great universities. It's also important to stress that this particular student, his life is not over. He's not going to Harvard. I understand he's terribly disappointed. Most people don't go to Harvard. He has been denied a great privilege. His life isn't over. And I think it's important, not just for this discussion, but in general, when people talk about the students who don't get into Harvard, their lives aren't over.
Yeah, and to that point, Francis writes, no student has a right to be accepted to any college or university. Not sure why this is a discussion. Let's go to Don in Sonoma. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. I feel this is a really important subject, and I feel that this brings a lot of stuff to light, and I think the important thing here is not this kid or what he did. It's the conversation. And I heard some really great comments about conservatives, and I kind of would feel the same way. Being neither myself, I would feel that this kid needs to, like you say, move on his life. He can go to another school. But Harvard has made a decision. In the past, Harvard would have had people like this, and it never would have come out, back in the days of the 50s or the 20s when this was acceptable. The people, the group that this was aimed at, had to endure this for, I don't know when that particular term came around, but I know it was back in the slave days. So then I didn't do that for many years, and then they turned it about in music, and my friends, they'd use it with each other. That was acceptable because they're de-burying the word. They're taking out the sting. But then I still knew it was inappropriate for me to use that word, except in a very, isolated situation with friends, joking. That might be something that crosses over. So the thing about this is that people don't just change their spots. And if you look at the pattern, I applaud Harvard at trying to make a decision to put people through their school that will end up in high positions of power and money and social station that would have integrity and have a knowledge of what would become their school.
Yeah.
So this guy just to grow up, basically, and he may learn his lesson, and hopefully others will learn from his lesson. After that, it's done.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know why we would criticize Harvard for this, or the conservative movement. We get in a big thing saying you're doing it because, it's not a double standard. It's not acceptable.
All right. Don, thanks very much for the thoughtful comment. Appreciate that. Here's another comment from a listener. Rather than insisting that privileged teenagers who make mistakes be given a second chance, why don't we focus on less privileged students who do the same and end up in the criminal justice system? And I think, Scott, that sort of speaks to what the earlier caller was talking about, that, teenagers' brains aren't very well formed. And I think, in terms of criminal justice reform, there's a growing understanding that maybe the criminal justice system needs to take that into account more often. We're just about at the end of the hour. Going forward, what impact do you think this has? Is this something that's just going to blow over in a day or two, or does it have ongoing ramifications for both teenagers and universities?
Well, I think it is a useful reminder to teenagers that what they say and do as teenagers can affect the way people view them. And if it results in fewer people using the N-word, well, maybe that's a good thing. Ideally, I think we'd all like to live in a world where fewer people are tempted to use the N-word, but I don't think that's a bad lesson. I also think people should stop equating this student with all conservatives. I actually think that's an insult to conservatives. Conservatives don't have a requirement to use the N-word and other racial slurs. And so I would really focus this on somebody used terrible, hurtful language, some of it about individuals, and he's now suffering a consequence.
All right.
I'd leave it there.
All right. Scott Jasica, we are going to leave it there, editor of Inside Higher Ed. Thanks so much for joining us on short notice. We appreciate that, and thanks to all of our listeners for the very thoughtful comments and phone calls. I'm Scott Schaefer here today for Michael Krasny. Mina Kim will be here tomorrow. Thanks so much for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.